Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. As COVID infection rates continue to drop and America opens up, it's time for us to take another look at where we are with the pandemic. Everything is changing again. But are we back to normal? Is the fight over? Well, joining us to discuss this is Dr. Melissa Clark, emergency medicine physician and co-founder of the Black Coalition Against COVID-19. We're going to talk to her tonight, and she's going to answer our questions as well as yours. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You are welcome to tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Clark, thanks for joining the conversation.
Absolutely, Harold. How are you tonight?
I am doing just fine. And thank you so much for asking. So let's talk about everyone else. Here we are now, about a year and a half after the start of the pandemic in the United States. How would you characterize where we are right now? Are we still in a pandemic, or do you believe that things are changing enough where there needs to be an altering of how we address where we are?
Well, I think both are actually true. We are actually still in a pandemic, but we all along in this pandemic have had to make adjustments as we went along. And I think now is no different than the other times. So, you know, we're a year into this. We've experienced a lot of trauma, both individually and collectively, with job losses and economic hardship, death, illness, not even being able to grieve our loved ones. And so it's caused a lot of anxiety, obviously, depressions. We're seeing increases in addiction. And those things have not gone away. Those are a result of the pandemic. But the good news is that, the rate of people getting COVID has indeed gone down. It's new cases have dropped by anywhere from 80 to 85%, as well as the rate of death. But there are still pockets of people who have not gotten vaccinated. We're only about 50% of our vaccination rate. And the vaccines really are responsible for a lot of that drop in cases and deaths. So the more that people continue to not get vaccinated, the longer things are going to go on. And even as things open back up, we'll still be at risk because of the possibility of spread with folks who are unvaccinated.
What do you think of the efforts that a lot of local governments are making to incentivize people to get vaccinated? We've got lottery winnings. There was an announcement today in Maryland, a $40,000 vaccine lottery winner. They're offering beer. There was a report today about joints for shots
in Washington State.
How about that? So they're offering just about everything to get people to get vaccinated. What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's a double-edged sword. Look, it's made a difference in some places in terms of the vaccination rates. However, I think we have to be very careful about the message that we're sending with some of the incentives. This is actually a public health campaign. Is it appropriate to use drugs and alcohol, which may be addictive and may have side effects for some people that are unwanted? So I think we have to be very careful. And also, too, at the Black Coalition Against COVID, we did a really interesting focus group over the weekend with young people. And I have to give a shout out to our constituents, the labor movement in D.C., as well as the Rodham Institute at GW, who did the focus group. And the young people that participated basically said, a lot of times these incentives make them suspect. They feel sometimes like they're bribes. So there are some people who are actually turned off from the incentives. So again, we have to be very careful with our messaging and very careful with exactly what the public is perceiving from these incentives.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're doing another COVID-19 update, as we often do once a month or so. And we're trying to get a handle on where we are with this pandemic, where we are with vaccines, particularly as it relates to communities of color, young people, and how we move forward as America continues to open up, and not only as it relates to the business community, but also, you know, families, as people are beginning to venture out just a little bit more, taking vacations and the like. So give us a call if you have a comment or a question at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So let's talk about those young people, or the younger people, where we are seeing school districts, for example, Prince George's County is going to have full attendance in the fall. However, there is an option for some of the youngest students because we still do not have a vaccine approval for, you know, for them. And as we have seen during the course of this pandemic, as information has evolved, and that very, very young children are not susceptible to getting very sick or presenting with some of the symptoms. But we still have other members of the community, particularly the Black community, that remain vulnerable. Your thoughts about that?
Well, two things that I want to be really clear about. Earlier in the pandemic, there was some research that suggested that children could not spread COVID. And as we've gone through this pandemic, it's abundantly clear that children do spread COVID. The other thing is, yes, children are much less susceptible to getting severely ill. However, as older people have gotten vaccinated and more variants have emerged, we're seeing that these new strains of the coronavirus that have emerged are infecting and affecting people at younger ages. So we're seeing a higher proportion of children being in the hospital. And unfortunately, just as the pandemic has had a disproportionate effect on Black and brown adults, it has had a disproportionate effect on Black and brown children. So we see more cases of COVID in Black and brown children, and also more of that MISC complication in children that can come even after infection with the coronavirus, where there were no symptoms in the children, but a few weeks later, they end up being very sick. And so I think it's very important, as we talk about going to summer camps and reconvening school in the fall, number one, that there is the option still to have virtual opportunities to learn, but also for those who choose to go back, that these school buildings and the camp facilities are safe, that outdoor activities take place as much as possible. Ventilation is optimized. I saw today on the news where DC Public Schools are putting in new filters in their schools, which I think is wonderful, HVAC filters, and that social distancing is enforced as well as mask wearing when appropriate. So all these things together, and of course, continued hand washing. So once children reconvene, especially for those who are not yet eligible to be vaccinated, those 11 and under, it'll be crucial to continue to do those safety behaviors.
Help me with the alphabet soup, Dr. Clark. You mentioned MISC.
Multisystem inflammatory syndrome.
So what is that for those who didn't get to finish med school?
Oh, absolutely. So COVID works by causing inflammation in the body, especially in the blood vessels. Blood vessels go everywhere in our bodies, right? Because they carry blood everywhere. So multisystem inflammatory disease is a disease of, is when COVID causes inflammation in the blood vessels, basically swelling. So blood is impeded, the blood flow is impeded, and also it leads to less blood flow getting to our organs, and so they can get sick and not function well. So our kidneys, our heart, our lungs, our brain. And so in children, we see this delayed reaction to COVID. Even after the initial infection has passed, this inflammatory condition can pop up 1 or 2 weeks later.
And before I go to the phone lines, I also want to talk to you about the many variants that we continue to see rising as we move through this pandemic. What is the Delta variant?
So I just want to explain how, first, before we get into variants, how viruses work. They cannot live unless they are in someone's body. And when they get into your body, they multiply and they turn your body into, in the case of the coronavirus, into a coronavirus-making factory, right? And in the process of that manufacturing of new little viruses, sometimes mistakes are made and changes happen to the original strain of the virus. A lot of times these variations, which result in the variants, have absolutely no bearing on the strength of the virus. But occasionally you'll get a variant that emerges that's more infectious, that is more lethal. And if you've had the original strain of COVID, you can get reinfected. So there are multiple variants, probably millions of variants that have arisen, but the significant ones, the ones that are more infectious, like the UK variant, the India variant, the South African variant, are more infectious. The Brazilian variant we've seen affect children more. And so these are the concerns that the longer that we go unvaccinated, the more the virus will circulate in the population and the higher the risk that a new variant will emerge that the existing vaccines won't be effective against. So that's why there's a huge push to try to get everybody vaccinated as soon as possible. It's not like a sinister plot, which many people believe. It's really to create a firewall, essentially, in the population so that the virus doesn't have anywhere to go. And if you have a breach in the firewall, meaning there are people who are unvaccinated, that's a weakness in the firewall, well, then the virus will just spread through them.
So as it relates to the Delta variant, how does that compare to some of the other variants that you've mentioned?
Well, it appears that it's more infectious, and in addition to the ones that I already named.
I see. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are having a COVID update, answering your questions about where we are in this fight against the pandemic. Let's go to Tawana. Tawana, thanks for hanging on, calling from Waldorf. What's on your mind?
Hi. I wanted to find out if you are fully vaccinated and you're around people that are not vaccinated and they have COVID, is it possible for the person that's fully vaccinated to still get COVID? Also, can you pass it along to someone else that's not vaccinated?
Excellent question. So, yes, it is definitely possible. What we do see is that it's more difficult to get COVID that makes you very sick once you've been vaccinated.
Go ahead, please. Finish your point, doctor.
Vaccine works that was publicized a lot when the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines first came out. That 94% to 95%, and what that really means is that 94% to 95% of the time, it'll keep you safe from getting an infection. But 5% of the time, you might have a breakthrough infection. So we've seen that out of about 146 million people who are fully vaccinated, 300 million people who've gotten at least one shot, we've had about 10,000 breakthrough infections. So
okay.
We do see that it does happen, but it's very, very rare.
Okay.
If you do have symptoms, if you've been vaccinated and you do have symptoms of COVID, it's important to get tested. It's important still to isolate. It is possible to pass it along. But what we're seeing in the population studies is that overall, the risk of passing COVID if you've been vaccinated has gone way down.
Okay. Thank you.
Tawanda, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are answering your questions during our monthly COVID-19 update. If you have any comments or questions, give us a call. Deborah, calling from Temple Hills. Deborah, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Deborah, are you there?
I'm here.
Go right ahead, please.
So I'm a federal employee, and I have to go in twice a week to the office, and they're not turning on the air conditioning. Mm. Is that dangerous? Because there's no ventilation at all.
I'm not sure. Great question. I'm not sure why they're not turning on the air conditioning in your building, because that can present issues as well with people getting heat exhaustion.
Right.
But as far as the air conditioning goes, I think I mentioned that DC schools were upgrading their air conditioning filters. There are recommended filters in commercial buildings that help to cut down on the spread of the virus throughout the building. And so I would definitely say that that is something that needs to be instituted in every commercial building, that level of filtration. And if it's possible to open windows, if they're not turning on the air conditioning, I think that that's equally important as well. But ventilation is very important.
Thank you so much, Cynthia. Deborah, I'm sorry. Thank you so much for that question. I want to touch on something, and we may need to take a break and then come back to it, but at least I want to put this out here. I think a lot of employers are wrestling with bringing people back, whether it's federal government, private industry, and the like, and there's been, in some quarters, a lot of pushback from employees who don't want to come back to the office. What do you say about that particular issue? And you have about 20 seconds, and then I'll let you continue on the other side. Real quick, your thoughts.
So I think it's really important to keep in mind that, you know, we have developed a new way of working. And I think on an individual basis, managers and employers need to work with their individual staff, understand what their risks are, what their concerns are, and if they have been able to effectively work from home, let them do that. And I guess we can address the rest on the other side, because there is a precedent for employers requiring vaccines, and I think that's the other flip side of the issue.
Well, let's talk about that on the other side. Cynthia, calling from D.C., we're going to talk to you. Also, Walden, calling from Maryland, you're next as well. Don't hang up. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I'm Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm is next on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. We'll be back in just a second. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are doing our monthly COVID-19 update, examining where we are with the pandemic, indeed where the pandemic is with us right now. My guest is Dr. Melissa Clark, emergency medicine physician and a co-founder of the Black Coalition Against COVID-19. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. As we were saying before the break, Dr. Clark, your assessment about how employers should handle the return to work. And because some people don't want to come back. And then you have some people for many reasons, whether it be for efficiency or just the human contact of coworkers who are ready to come back. How should that issue be handled, particularly as it relates to requiring vaccines?
Well, it turns out just the other day that the EEOC stated that employers can legally require employees to be vaccinated for COVID-19 as long as reasonable accommodations are made to accommodate those individuals who are exempt from mandatory immunization. So that would include people who have medical reasons, for example, severe allergy to the vaccine, or for religious reasons, feel that they should not get vaccinated. It doesn't supersede state law. So, for example, in Alabama, their governor signed into law that venues, schools, and employers cannot require COVID vaccine. So you have to go by state laws. But in the absence of a state law, that EEOC allowance does stand. So we might see employers start to require COVID vaccine. Certainly for students coming back to campuses, that has been the case in many college campuses across the country. So if you are vaccinated and you go back to work and 100% of people in your workplace are vaccinated, that should have some level of comfort. But as I said before the break, I think it needs to be done on an individual basis, understand people's individual concerns, and if they have been effectively performing at home and don't want to come in, then I think that should definitely be taken into account. Mm.
One thing I do want to drill down just a little bit more, when we were asking about the Delta variant, you were saying that it is more contagious. I should have been more clear. The naming of these variants, of course, we had the South African variant, the UK variant, the South American variant, and now these names are dealing with Greek letter names instead of geographical names. Yeah, so as not to apply a stigma to these variants. Does that work? Does it matter? Your thoughts about that? I mean, because it seems to me in one sense it's now they're going to get it. Now they're going to change the names, but has the damage already been done?
Well, you know, I really think that more education needs to be done. Like I gave the explanation of where variants come from. We have had variants, millions of variants here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We've had and there have been ones that have been more infectious, like there was one from California and one from New York and one from Texas. So, you know, rather than vilifying the place that it comes from, understand that it could happen anywhere and from anyone. And again, I think that brings it on home that if you get COVID, that you are a potential source for a variant to pop up. It could happen to anyone. So the fact that it's come from Britain or from India or from Brazil or from California or New York, it really doesn't matter because it could come from anywhere.
Back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Cynthia, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Cynthia, are you there? Give us a call back if you can. Let's go to Waldeen, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm calling. If you're fully vaccinated, is it possible that you can still get COVID? And what would be some of the symptoms?
Yes, I believe that was a similar to one of our previous callers, and absolutely, yes, you can still get COVID, but it's very, very, very rare. Some of the symptoms of COVID are cough, sneeze, nausea, diarrhea, stomach pain, chest pain, and then some of the complications of COVID can be blood clots. So that could happen anywhere in your body. That could be a swollen leg. That could be signs and symptoms of a stroke. So those are the more severe forms of symptoms of COVID. And, of course, shortness of breath is the one that we know that basically is the sign that you definitely need to go to the hospital along with chest pain. So those are some of the more common symptoms, and I've listed some of the severe ones. But back to your question about can you get COVID after getting vaccinated, Yes, you can. It's very rare. I think it's important that even if you've been vaccinated, if you're in crowds or around a lot of people, that you continue to wear your mask and practice all the hygiene techniques that have been touted throughout the pandemic, including hand washing and social distancing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dean, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I do want to talk more about the vaccine issue because the president says that he has a goal for the country of 70% of the population being vaccinated by the 4th of July, with a drop in the number of people who are now getting vaccinated, number one. Number two, this issue of vaccine hesitancy, and in some cases not hesitancy, but downright resistance. And I'm not talking about people who have been anti-vaxxers for decades and part of that movement. I'm talking about people who are anti-COVID vaccine people. What impact does that have on the fight against the pandemic when you're having people with either old information, misinformation, disinformation, completely inaccurate information? And the thing that I often hear from people, you don't know what's in that stuff. Well, I'm not a physician, and neither are you. And you don't know what's in aspirin or Tylenol or your allergy medicine or the insulin that your mother takes or anything else. So how do you address that?
So, you know, I've had a streaming show on Facebook Live on my platforms, Dr. Melissa Clark, and also on blackdoctor.org for a year now. And so I take a lot of live questions, just as we're doing now. And then I also get out in the community. As a matter of fact, I was in Ward 8 in Washington Highlands neighborhood just this past Saturday. And I do a lot of talks to different community organizations, everyone from Black Ski to, I've talked to returning citizens and women's shelters. And so I've heard a lot of concerns, and they all pretty much fall along some of the lines that you have described. And I think the most important thing is, look, I am all about empowering people and empowering them to question. And I think it's great to question. But then you also have to make sure that the person that the places that you're getting your information from are reputable information sources. For too long in the Black community, you know, we obviously have a traumatized history when it has to come to the medical establishment, which continues today, by the way. It's not just our concern about the Tuskegee experiments, et cetera, but even when we interact with the healthcare system now, we're sometimes talked down to and disrespected. So there's a lot of trauma and a lot to unpack there. But for months now, Black doctors, Black researchers, clergy, people from all across society have been coming out and saying, look, these vaccines are safe, these vaccines are effective. And it's important when you talk to somebody who has doubts to listen to them, to not ridicule them, because they're coming from a place of concern for their health, for the health of their children. Sometimes they may be making a decision about whether an older parent who can't decide for themselves anymore needs to get vaccinated, as I had to do with my mom. And so it's important to listen to exactly what their concern is, but understand that I'll have to say, for all the concerns that I've encountered, to meet them with what the facts are. And the facts are that we've seen with vaccination that it's overwhelmingly safe. We've seen the rate of COVID plummet. Here in D.C., we are at about 47% of the population being vaccinated. But in some neighborhoods, mainly in Ward 7 and 8, unfortunately, some places less than 20% of the population is vaccinated. And so it's important to get out and meet people where they are, make it easy for them to get vaccines, but at the same time, provide education up front. And so there are a lot of initiatives going on that the Black Coalition is involved in. The latest one is Shots in the Shops. So for all my stylists and barbers who are listening, if you get educated about the COVID vaccine and you can talk to your clients about it, there's a four-hour workshop that's being offered through University of Maryland. You get reimbursed for your time in taking that four-hour workshop. And the idea is so that stylists and barbers can talk to their clients about the COVID vaccine. There are a number of Juneteenth events going on in the community at Covenant House in Ward 8, and then also at Covenant Baptist Church in Southwest, Pennsylvania Avenue Baptist Church in Southeast, First Baptist Church in Michigan Park, all between June 17th and 19th, where there'll be entertainment, but there'll also be options for testing and getting vaccinated and learning more about the COVID vaccine. So a lot of on-the-ground, meeting people where they are, efforts, and really trying to make it easy for people to get vaccinated if they want to do that.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is our monthly COVID-19 update, trying to get you the latest and most accurate information on the pandemic and where we are with it and how best to move forward as things continue to open up. Let me go to Jeffrey calling from D.C. Jeffrey, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening. I had the question of I'm vaccinated, and I know it's been said on the show, and I already knew that you can still catch COVID even if you are vaccinated. I know that you can spread it even if you're vaccinated. So a friend of a friend, I mean, I know this friend of a friend, but from what I was told, that her cousin was fully vaccinated, caught COVID, and passed away. I guess with the stats, because, I mean, I know it's supposed to be very, very low, but what is, you know, do you know what the stats are on how many people who are fully vaccinated catch COVID? And do you know how many people have passed, you know, even though they're fully vaccinated? I mean, what is the very, very low? Like, you know, do you have the numbers?
Yes, I do. Great question. So, again, it's important to put this into context that over 300 million people have been vaccinated. We've seen about 10,000 out of 300 million breakthrough infections. And out of those 10,000 people, about 50 have died. Again, it's important to also keep in mind that overwhelmingly, so whatever 300 million minus 10,000 is, that's the number of people who've been fine after getting vaccinated and not gotten COVID. And it's a very, very rare event for that to happen. So, again, I think it's important to keep that in context when you keep in mind that without the vaccine, the rates of death are, where are we now? I believe around 612,000 Americans and over 3 million people worldwide have died of COVID. So it's important to sort of keep that in mind.
Yeah. Understood.
Jeffrey, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to talk about the phenomenon related to people who never have seemed to recover directly or indirectly from a COVID-19 infection, the long haulers. We had a guest on this program several months ago who, prior to catching the virus, was an extremely healthy person. Afterwards, She was having all kinds of problems, weakness and everything else. And now she's been diagnosed with a severe heart disease. And forgive me for not knowing the really long name that she had mentioned to me. But she said one of the things that happened to her last month was that she decided to take a walk. And walked a couple of blocks, literally a couple of blocks from her house, and then began to feel very, very severe chest pains and the like, and was too tired, literally too tired initially to walk back home those two blocks. And that's just one, you know, just one example, but this disease has been so horrific and so manipulative as it relates to the impact that it has had on some of these long haulers, that for some it may be heart disease, for others it may be something else. Where are we in this fight against the long hauler situation?
So, yeah, Harold, I'm sorry to hear about your friend, and that definitely is a potential complication of COVID-19. Even after you have recovered from the initial infection, we have these long haul symptoms that can be anywhere from presenting in your nervous system, and as you mentioned, weakness, tingling on your arms and legs, mental health issues like depression, anxiety, sleeplessness, heart issues like high blood pressure. I personally know three people who had normal blood pressures before they got COVID, and afterwards now require blood pressure medicines for many, many months after the infection. There was a recent report about diabetes as being a potential complication after getting COVID. There's a well-known cardiologist at our hospital center who says that now half of his practice are people who have complications, long-term complications from COVID. So it is definitely an illness, a serious concern. When it comes to these illnesses, there is not a cure. There's not a treatment that we know of. Anecdotally, we've heard from some people who have had long COVID that when they've gotten vaccinated, that it actually helped to improve their symptoms. So 2-1, basically, of people are saying, yes, I feel much better after my vaccination. So it's something that's still being studied, still being worked on. But I think the bottom line is to avoid getting COVID, because we don't know who might be the one who might be the patients who get the long haul syndrome after having COVID.
Let's talk about travel. Things have really opened up. You could not have imagined that we are where we are now compared to where we were a year ago, where the streets were empty, airports were empty, train stations were empty. Well, now people are getting back to it, and people are also traveling internationally. What kinds of things should people be concerned about as they decide to vacation again? Because the reason I ask is because people are vacationing as if we were never in a pandemic, short of doing what they're supposed to do based on what a flight attendant may tell them to make sure that they have a mask on the plane. But then after that, it seems to be, in many cases, a free-for-all.
Yeah, we are definitely seeming as if we are not in a pandemic, right? Because things are opening up. Most, if not all, airlines have abolished holding that middle seat open. And so we're seeing planes once again packed like, you know, sardine cans. What I mentioned before about even if you've been vaccinated and you find yourself in a crowded situation like an airport or an airplane, it's important to continue to wear your mask in those situations. And when you get to your destination, I would not necessarily go to events, again, where there are lots of crowds because of the risk for for the spread of COVID in those particular situations. I think it's okay to travel. I think you just have to take those precautions. I think it's important to go for vacation because we have been pent up for a year. We have, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, a lot of mental health issues as a result of being pent up and not getting out. But we still have to be vigilant, careful, wise in what we do and where we go and who we are around as we make those travel decisions.
I remember last year, it was late summer or perhaps early fall, and this, of course, was before the first vaccine was approved, that Dr. Anthony Fauci spoke about the possibility of a dark winter. We are still only a year and a half into this since the very first case was discovered here in the United States. As things begin to shift regarding vaccine availability, their mass vaccination centers are closing and availability is shifting from the stadiums and the convention centers to, you know, smaller venues and pop-up venues, for example. What is your concern when the weather changes? Flu season is always fall into winter. Do you believe that we may have to look at treating COVID-19 like we treat historically the flu? Will we have a COVID-19 season to avoid a dark winter?
Certainly this past winter was worse than the summer, even the summer surge that we saw. But I think that has to do with the fact that people were more inside. There was not an option to go outside. And so I don't think that the virus itself spreads less in the summertime. I think it's just a matter of the fact that we can be out more in the summertime. And look, you know, we are in an evolving situation. I want to really stress that to people. Just because we see things opening up now, there's still reason for caution as we move into the fall and move into the winter. Number one is, as we talked about throughout the program, the variant. We don't know what the effect of the variants are going to be, if new variants are going to pop up. We don't know how long the immunity from the initial set of vaccinations that we got is going to last. And so we have to continue to monitor the situation, be flexible, and listen to the advice of public health experts and epidemiologists and scientists, doctors who are on top of this and will continue to advise us as to the best course of action as we get closer to the winter time. Because we're wearing masks less, unfortunately, we're probably going to have a return of flu season. One of the things that is not talked about is that we basically had a non-existent flu season last winter because people socially distanced, washed their hands, and most importantly, wore masks. So now that the mask mandates in a lot of places are being removed, there's going to be a concern, I think, if people don't get vaccinated for the flu, that we're going to have a return of flu season. It's going to be hard to distinguish, is this flu, is this COVID? And we might also get a return of hospitals getting overwhelmed, co-infections happening, meaning people having both. So I think it's really important that we not assume that just because things are opening up and everything, you know, are headed in the right direction in terms of cases and death rates, that we're out of the woods. We still need to be vigilant. We still need to be flexible and pay attention to the advice from public health experts.
How do you know that we may have to get a booster shot or something like that? I've been vaccinated. I received my second Pfizer shot on February 28th. We are now in June. And for people like myself who were vaccinated relatively early, and I feel fine and am, you know, COVID negative, but should I begin to entertain thoughts about getting another COVID-19 vaccination this fall or next year? There's still a lot. The jury is, I know, is still out on how long the current vaccine will last.
Well, what we do know is at minimum, it will last 6 months, at minimum. And that we know because of the original people enrolled in the vaccine trials. After 6 months, they still had immunity. And we're going to continue to get periodic updates at 9 months, 12 months, et cetera, and continuing on into the future up to 2 years to know how long that immunity is lasting in those original vaccine trial participants. And again, that's again what I meant by saying we have to stay flexible. We have to keep our ear to the ground and pay attention, because if it does turn out that after a certain period of time, immunity starts to go down, then it's more important, of course, to get the booster, which many of the existing companies, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, et cetera, are working on in case it is needed. So we don't know yet, as you said, but we have to, remain vigilant and see what the science shows.
Are you concerned that that possibility may grow the number of people who are vaccine hesitant, even if they were vaccinated the first go round?
I am concerned. We do, of course, see just between the first and the second shot for Moderna and Pfizer. Of course, Johnson & Johnson only requires one vaccination, but we see a fall off of about 8%, 8 to 10% of people between that first and second dose. And so there would be a concern that if a booster is required in the future, and again, that's an if, that there would be a fall off and there would be need to be a whole nother push to get people revaccinated. So yes, there's definitely a concern about that. It's really important to keep in mind for those people who had one dose of Pfizer and Moderna that it doesn't give you as much protection as if you get two doses. At two doses, it's over 90% effective. Our immune system is a really beautiful thing. It makes antibodies after that first shot, but the second shot, the purpose of that is to create more cells that have the memory of what the coronavirus looks like, and should it present itself in the future, meaning you get exposed to the coronavirus, those cells will multiply and start to make more antibodies. And that happens predominantly in people who've gotten two shots. So you need both shots to really get that maximum benefit and have your immune system be at its most ready to address the COVID vaccine.
We're going to have to let that be the last word. Dr. Melissa Clark, thank you so much for your expertise. Please be safe.
All right.
Thank you. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, June 8th. I'm Harold Fisher. Stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.